Hi, Pablo. Hi, nice to meet you.
Hello.
So welcome, Pablo Lorraine, to the Picture House podcast. And congratulations on Spencer, which for me was such a beautiful, impeccably crafted and deeply moving film.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's been 5 years since 2016's highly acclaimed Jackie, about Jackie Kennedy. Can you tell me what drew you to choose both these extraordinary women and to present your definitions of them on film?
Well, I guess, you know, the motivations for each of them are different. In the case of, well, there are many things in common, of course, but you know, trying to have a vision and a version on this fascinating woman was interesting to me. In the case of Jackie, I was actually invited by another filmmaker, Darren Aronofsky, to make this movie. So it was a different type of exercise and journey. And I think Jackie is about, you know, about memory, legacy, and grief. And I think Spencer, it's about identity and motherhood. Of course, both movies have many things in common. They're both about women that somehow shaped the 20th century, women that were related to important, you know, and powerful families, and women that were, you know, in very crucial and unusual circumstances, but they were both able to create a very strong identity, people that created a reflection in millions. And in the case of Spencer, you know, I grew up looking at my mom, being very interested in her. And then when I became an adult, I realized that my mom was just one, you know, around millions that were interested in her. And for me, I think, you know, even though there's a lot of information around her life and legacy, I would say that she remains as a mystery to me. And even though there's a lot, I really don't think that we know much. And when that mystery exists, there's always room for fiction, room for to create a movie that might be interesting for others.
Absolutely. I mean, I was really struck by how you gave both these deeply fetishized women who have almost lost their humanity through the scrutiny that they've had, by honing in on very specific details of their lives, you gave them back their humanity. Was that what your intention might have been?
Well, I don't think I gave them back the humanity. I think they have a very strong humanity. What we try to do is to capture that and to be able to put that on screen. And as you said, we just chose just a few days where maybe it's possible to have an interesting approach that would be different in other circumstances. I say this because any of us, any person, any human, when it's going through huge crisis, the way that we behave could actually define us better than when we are in a good situation, if you could say something like that. So it was a good opportunity to realize that in the days that the movie are presenting, which is, you know, somewhere in the beginning of the 90s, where she decides to leave the royal family and not to become a queen and be able to, you know, exist in her own world and create her own rules and find her identity. That's the reason of the name. That's why we call it Spencer, because she's going back to the name that she had before she got married. It's how does a woman like Diana can go through this huge crisis and by the end she finds herself again and go through a very beautiful process of healing and understand that her, you know, for her, and I guess for any mother, I'm a father too, so for myself would be the same. You understand that your own children are, you know, the most relevant thing. That's what I think this movie, it's ultimately about motherhood.
Yes, and she never purported to want anything more than that, really. She always showed us, in a way, who she was, and yet so much more was demanded of her. But it from what I understood, from her life and her works, is it, she just wanted to be in a loving family situation, you know, and she created that in a way wherever she went, in my opinion.
But don't you think that we all want to be in that context?
Yeah.
We all want to be in that situation. We want to feel love, and we want to feel that people are taking care of us and you are taking care of others.
Absolutely. It's such an abomination of humanity in a way that when Charles says to her, you have to be two people, I think that's what we loved so much about her, was that she didn't do that. She couldn't do that. That expectation was far too much.
Well, she couldn't do that by the rules that, you know, some people was expecting her to feel and to work. She was likely someone that was able to manage a public persona that was very close to who she was. That's why, I guess, we can all feel identified with her, and we can all feel close to her. And that is why it's so interesting. One of the biggest mysteries, I think, that she had that draws to make this movie, you know, is try to understand why did she create such an empathy in millions around the world. And it's very unusual, because there might be a lot of answers to that question. But for one of them, maybe it's that she was a very regular and somehow ordinary woman in a very unusual circumstances. And that's where we can all relate to her, because ultimately she wanted just simple things.
Yes. It's hard to sometimes convey that, isn't it? Just the most simple thing is love. How on earth do you screen that? How on earth do you capture that? You know, and I think that you did it so beautifully with Maggie, the character. And I'm hoping that she was real, but I'm sure she isn't. Was she like an amalgam of many supporters of Diana through her struggle?
Yeah, she was. And I think that what Maggie, and well, Sally Hawkins, who is, you know, just a wonderful, wonderful actress, a genius, I think. And
yeah,
with such a sensibility and humanity. I think that what she's there to do is to make her understand, make Diana understand that she's someone that was loved. I think that was her struggle. She, even though, you know, she felt loved by others, she maybe sometimes had a doubt on that. And when she realized that she's loved and she's protected by people that maybe is not the usual people, that people that you believe that would be there for that, you know, she becomes stronger and she's willing to keep going.
And it's the hero's journey rather than the fairy tale, isn't it? That they're going through, that both she and Jackie walked through. They were utterly alone in some sense, and then they found these pockets of strength from people. So talk to me about Kristen Stewart, because she embodied that. I mean, I was so blown away by her performance. It was like every cell of her being was committed to portraying the Diana that you imagined. Can you talk to me about casting her and bringing her on board and what she brought?
Well, you know, Kristen has a very particular mystery, and it's the kind and the type of actresses, there are very few of them, I think, that no matter what they're doing in front of the camera, they will always keep a very strong internal world. And no matter what they say, you know, as characters on the film, sometimes they could even express how they feel and what they're thinking. You keep wondering what is really going on inside of her. And that interaction, it's wonderful for cinema. And also, I think, you know, it's not just Kristen's incredible humanity and density. She's also a very skillful actress, you know, which is very relevant when you're making a movie about someone like Diana. And considering that Kristen is American and she had to sort of travel towards the character to get there, and she did a very beautiful work. You know, she was very focused and very into it. And she prepared herself for a long time during lockdown, actually. So, yeah, it was such a joy, you know, just to see her perform. It was wonderful. And I learned a lot. It was a beautiful process.
And just in capturing Diana's look, I mean, I know in a way that this was in no way an impersonation of Diana, but in a way it was the reflection of her internal pain through her eyes. And I think her eyes are a very, very important part of Diana's physicality. And I'm just wondering about the cinematography around Kristen and capturing, I mean, Bono described those, her eyes as deep pools that you just wanted to dive into.
Yeah, well, we worked with Claire Mathon, who's a French DP, and she's incredible, got along really well, connected really well. And she, you know, most importantly, connected really well with Kristen. I think that was something really beautiful. And yeah, the cinematography, you know, and the type of framing and the camera style, it's somehow very classic. I think it's the most classic movie I have personally made. I tried to avoid it all kind of, you know, audiovisual fireworks. And we went straight to her and we had the camera quite close to her. I think that that helps to create an intimacy that is very beautiful. And it's hard to describe with words. I know that we're talking and this is a podcast. And so we need to do our best. But in reality is that's where, you know, some sort of the undescribable process happens. When we were actually the camera was almost all the time really, really close to her. I would say 10, 15 centimeters from her face. It's like this. And when you do that, you start to feel what she's feeling and to start to be able to access to her perspective, to her POV. And it's great what Kristen does in that perspective, because she can be very, you know, distant. But eventually when she lets you in, it's, you know, this waterfall of emotions and sensibilities that is overwhelmingly beautiful. And it can be very moving, you know, and I think that's something that worked well, and it was exciting to see.
Absolutely. I honestly felt it was a privilege. And I know I don't use that word lightly. There was times when I found myself very tearful and thinking, I don't understand what alchemy is being worked here. So talk to me about working with Stephen Knight and the story. And it was completely gripping and compelling and believable from all angles. I know that you did so much painstaking research. Tell me how you settled on the final presentation.
Well, I think that the script itself, I was obviously involved at the beginning of the process, but then it's Steve, you know, we agreed on basic things like, you know, to compress it in just a few days, to, you know, make a movie about someone that was leaving her husband and throughout that difficult process, she was going to be able to find herself and understand what her life can be. Without Charles and without being a member of the family. And then Steve went to work and delivered the script that you saw. I mean, it's just the work of someone that has an incredible skills and talent when it comes to writing, not only in a sharp and interesting and sort of cool dialogue, but also in the human structure that he's proposing. I have made a number of movies, but I have never worked with a script that is so precise, and that we, you know, ultimately respected quite a lot during the editing. You know, it's the movie is quite similar from what he wrote. I did add a few scenes that I thought that could help, and they're actually in the movie. But what we wanted to show, I think, with Steve was how someone was trapped in the world of history and tradition. And in that regard, it's you know, to be able to see how she's willing to find herself and you know, and just to be sure of who she was. It's not easy, because
no, I mean, I thought that was such a clever thing, that device of leaving what was the sinister piece of bullying with the Anne Boleyn book, then turned out to be one of the most instructive and creative outlets for Diana. I just thought that was genius.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. I agree. And it's, yeah, that's Steve. And look, I think what is incredible in this is that Anne Boleyn was killed and beheaded almost more than 500 years ago. And of course, the many things are different, but there are some similarities in terms of how a woman was, you know, just used by others and was somehow, you know, determined by the force of history to play a role that others have played before many, many times. And so I guess that must be hard. Must be hard to be in a situation and a context where you have to play a role that is very specific. So yeah, it was a good parallel and a beautiful type of ghost that Steve created, and is played beautiful by Amy Manson, who is the actress who plays Anne Boleyn.
And also with the character that Timothy Spall plays, Major Alistair Gregory, he was a fabulously sinister amalgam of what protocol and duty represent. I mean, talk to me about him.
Well, first of all, I wanted to work with him for ages. I'm a big fan of his work. I, of course, grew up seeing Mike Leigh's movies, so it's so important. And when he accepted, I was extremely excited. Major Gregory, Tim Spall's character, represents, you know, those who believe that the royal family, it's here to, you know, to unite the English or the British spirit, and that the crown, you know, serves as a collective spiritual will and desire of protection and identity. So he thinks that the structure must be protected, and the family and the royal family must be protected by all means and in any circumstances. So he's the voice of tradition. He's the voice of history. He's the voice of time. So I understand that he could feel like someone that is sinister, but the way that I see it is that he is a man that is basically doing his job, and he is, you know, protecting what he has to protect. And what is also interesting and somehow beautiful is that he believes in it deeply. And so I think he's also another fragile human trying to do what he's supposed to be doing.
Yes, by any means necessary. And as he explained, you know, he has watched people die for the cause for which he serves. So that was where he was coming from, without a doubt. But it doesn't, you know, like taking on, like he embodied for me that the subtlety and the gaslighting that white patriarchy can move under, you know, in that this is all about duty, this is all about protocol, but actually it's about misogyny and keeping women very much in their place, whether you're Anne Boleyn or Diana or a daughter-in-law that's been married into a family because that's what you do, you become a domestic slave. And I felt that both Diana and Jackie actually took on the twin towers of patriarchy and misogyny, and briefly, and maybe not fully victoriously in ultimately how history bears out, they won.
They were able to break the rules of a system that was created by and for men. And I, in both cases, I had the pleasure of working with, you know, both Kristen and Natalie. They were very, very, you know, sensitive, but also brilliant minds. And they knew what they were doing, and they knew what they were playing. And so I, you know, I supported myself in their vision. You know, when you make a movie like this, the first thing that you have to understand is to know the limitations of your own, you know, in my case, perspective, which is the perspective of man. And So it's always very helpful to, you know, to lay many ideas and decisions and things that are important in their perspective. So I found myself in many occasions following them, you know, certain things that I would set up in a way, they would, you know, come in and say, why don't we do it like this? Because I think this is more appropriated because of this or that circumstance. And I'm like, of course, that's how we do it. And it's great. You know, sometimes you're in a situation on a set where what you have to do is to follow them. And the best direction you can have is silence, you know, and to see and to film them. That was a good thing. And I am very happy that they were both so generous to me.
I agree. And just finally, I have to address Johnny Greenwood's extraordinary score. Can you talk to me about how you worked with him, or did he just come with to you with this and just went, here it is, and you were like, oh my god, that's perfect?
Well, I am of course an incredible big fan of his work, whether it's in the band or on the music he had made for other movies that I love them, all of them actually. But yeah, so we approached him and he accepted, and we had a very long exchange. I have never met him in person, so it was all through virtual communications. And he proposed to combine, you know, the Baroque, some Baroque sort of style music with jazz, with free jazz, which I originally thought it was a very bold move. I have to admit, I didn't exactly understood before I heard anything how he was going to do that. But then the music came in, and it came in a little bit before we start shooting, and then at the beginning of the process as we were shooting. And I embraced that music, and it helped me to find as well the mood of the movie. So it was a very helpful process in the order that it happened. So yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I think that somehow this more of royal music, which is the Baroque, right? It's the music that you might believe would fit well, music for the royal family, was there to do that in a beautiful and sometimes a strange way as well. But then the jazz came in, and the jazz, it's a form of freedom in music. And that would represent really well what Diana was experiencing, whether in a crisis where things were more difficult, and even when some horror and terror was in the situation, and the jazz was there to support that. But at the same time, the jazz was there to let us understand how free she ultimately becomes. So yeah, the score, it's for me, it's mesmerizing, and it is a very, very important element of the operation that the movie presents. I think it's just basically very beautiful music.
It really, really is. I was so shocked by it. And I think that's one of the things, like, there's a fabulous line, I don't know if it's a spoiler. Well, it's about shocking people back into love. And I think that's often what's needed.
Yeah, it's Sally that says, all you need is shock, love, and laughter.
Yes, I loved it. Pablo Larraín, thank you so much for joining us today. I've so enjoyed speaking with you, and really good luck with this magnificent film.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.